Free Speech Radio News is supported by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliate stations, and listener supporters. To find out how you can support FSRN's programming, just visit our website at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. You can email us your feedback, questions, and story ideas to comments@fsrn.org. Today's newscast was produced by Tina Gisi and Monica Lopez. Washington, D.C. editor is Leanne Caldwell. Our headlines editor is Shannon Young. Technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Eric Klein and Christina.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. I did not do that. It faded on its own this time. It's 7 o'clock time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Bumpity bump for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bumpity bump.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, as we normally come your way this time of day. Joined tonight in the studio by Jim.
Hello again.
And Redbird.
Good evening.
Mike.
Hi.
Over on the other side of the studio is not Kevin.
Hello.
And down there in Philadelphia is Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Now, I'd like to start with something that somebody forwarded to us. A listener forwarded this to us, actually. It's a special phone number, so Bernie, please don't panic when you hear the magical dial tone sound.
Okay.
There it is. And we're going to dial this number. Going to mask the touch tone so that people can't translate them and dial this on their own.
But we're not going to give them out over the air?
No, we're not, because we believe in keeping information to ourselves. Anyway, listen to this.
This is a message from the United States Bureau of Morality, pursuant to Statute 2412-2, Disclosure of Surveillance. Citizen, by calling this number, you and your family are implicitly pleading guilty to the consumption of anti-American media and have been flagged as potential militants. The United States Bureau of Morality has activated the tracking system embedded in your personal media and initiated citizen surveillance. United States surveillance law gives us the right to search and seize information relating to subversive activities from your person, vehicle, workplace, or home. Any attempt to hinder or prevent our investigation will be met with all necessary force. You are now part of the problem. Your re-education is about to begin. God bless America.
Well, yeah, that's a bit chilling, don't you think? Fortunately, for those of you who are worried about us, Bernie, I took the liberty of masking our caller ID and putting your number in. Is that all right?
Oh, thank you. I'm already on that list anyway.
Yeah, I figured you probably were, so it wouldn't be that big a deal. That actually is something that Nine Inch Nails is responsible for. Trent Reznor apparently set up this 866 number. I'll give out the number, 866-445-6580. And you can call that and scare the hell out of your friends. We're not that far away from the Bureau of Morality, do you think?
No? Apparently somehow that listening to that is supposed to sell CDs.
I don't know how, because they didn't mention anything. If you hit a star, it asks you to leave your name and number.
Oh.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out how to get it to ask for a password, though. Maybe somebody else can hack it a little bit more and figure that out.
Well, actually, since it's a toll-free number, they already have your name and number when you call.
That's true. That's true. Or your name and number, depending on how exactly we routed the call.
You spoofed my number, yeah.
Although it uses ANI, I guess, so maybe that didn't work. It was caller ID, right? Right, not Kevin?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Unless you cause an ANI fail.
Which so, we didn't have time to do.
Unfortunately not.
One day we'll do this. Okay, it's no longer Don't Watch TV Week. Is that what it's called, Mike?
TV Turnoff Week.
TV Turnoff
Week. I think it was last week.
Last week. And I see all these little advertisements, which is kind of ironic, I guess. Get out of the box, TV Turnoff Week, 22-29 April. Not in my living room. Turn it off and live, or pull your head out. and a picture of some. That's all these
pleasant image.
Have pictures of a person whose head is stuck in the television set. But, you know, I have to wonder, most of the people who have pushed this on me are people who don't even have TV sets. So for them, every day is turn off, TV turn off day, right?
It's a little bit strange, yeah.
I mean, did you ever think what would happen if there was a radio turn off day?
Oh, that'd be horrible.
That would be horrible. Oh. So, I mean, why TV? Why pick on TV?
Why pick on TV? I think a lot of what's on TV is especially bad.
A lot of, yes. A lot of Americans are fat, but it doesn't mean that all of us are the same.
A lot of what's on the radio is bad, too.
That's true, too.
Not this show, of
course.
Well,
we're the exception. What if we were a TV show, though, and we were victimized by TV turnoff week?
Well, the thing is, the TV is different in that TV is very attention-grabbing and in many ways all-consuming. Mm-hmm. With radio, you can go about your business, putter around the house, wash the dishes, do dinner, talk to friends. Well, maybe not talk to friends.
I don't know. I've heard people are riveted to our show.
Well, yes, we're an exception. But television seems just, you know, sucks your brain in.
Well, while watching television in North Korea, it didn't suck my brain in. It was something to have on in the background. It was kind of fun to...
One question about TV turnoff week, though. If you decide to tape everything and then watch it later, does it count?
Oh, does it count? Does time shifting count on TV turnoff week?
I will forward your query, Jim, to the TV turnoff Central Committee and get back to you.
I'd like to know because, you know, you're not really accomplishing anything if you're watching TV a week later and watching the same thing, watching twice as much.
Well, on the other hand, when I tape things, as I do Wednesday nights with Lost and Jeopardy.
Yeah, I had 4 hours of Lost to catch up on when I got back.
Oh, it's actually getting good. I only started
it's
watching.
It's actually getting good. It got good 2 seasons ago. But
I haven't watched until this season, but anyway. The point is, taping is so much better because you just skip the commercials.
Gee whiz, I never thought of that. I'm sure you could do that.
But it lowers the time from an hour show to a 40-minute show.
Mm-hmm.
Works even better with Wheel of Fortune. Wheel of Fortune is a 10-minute show.
It's like getting a show for free every time you watch two.
With about 10 seconds of brain power. Okay, continuing along, moving away from television. There's something, Google is in the news again, as it always is. By providing free consulting and some software, Google is helping state governments make reams of public records that are now unavailable or hard to find online, easily accessible to web surfers. The internet search company hopes to eventually persuade federal agencies to employ the same tools, an effort that excites advocates of open government, but worries some consumer privacy experts. In other words, basically looking up who owns what piece of property in what state, it'll be very, very simple. We can all be private investigators. Jim, you're raising your hand.
I see excitement coming down the track.
But this is all information that's otherwise public, right?
I know that, but you have to go to the courthouse, sometimes even the county courthouse, which becomes difficult because most states have about 60 counties or so. Mm-hmm. I can see Google taking these vast quantities of records and missing hundreds and thousands and hundreds of thousands of Social Security numbers. Ooh, what fun.
Our friend Mark Rotenberg over at the Electronic Privacy Information Center down there in D.C., said many public health and financial records should not necessarily be widely available because they often contain citizens, as you say, Social Security numbers. Such information should be redacted from records regardless of whether they're viewed online or in person at a government office. He also said Google has a checkered past on privacy, noting that the company tracks internet search users who access government data in order to target ads at them. Epic recently filed a complaint with the FTC urging it to investigate Google regarding such activities, as well as its proposed acquisition of online advertising company DoubleClick.
So what they're advocating is not allowing this information to be viewable by the average individual with internet access, but keeping it sort of confined to the private investigator community? Because that's really what's happening, right? Mm-hmm. They already have access to all this information.
They do.
And there's plenty of private investigating firms that compile it and have all these databases sort of available to themselves and internally.
But I think what we're going to see is we're going to have a sense of shock when we realize how much information is accessible to those people. If that becomes accessible to everybody, all of a sudden, that's all kinds of information about you that will be out there that you had no idea was out there.
And it might be a good thing, too, because it might force more privacy awareness.
Isn't it sort of closing the door after the horse is already gallivanting?
Well, it'll sort of open people's eyes as to what's out there.
Just a little story on how Google is expanding. I've done searches for my last name, and originally, about a year ago, there were 5 entries, all relatively obscure and inoffensive to anybody seeking to steal my identity.
There's more now.
Then it went up to 8, including the location of my father's grave and date of death. Now it's even more. My mother's name, her vital statistics, and this is from an obituary. Her mother's maiden name, every relative on that side of the family.
You see the camera on your front door, you see that?
I've seen that for quite some time. And I'm just afraid it's going to start expanding exponentially.
I think it will. I agree with you.
But you also realize that there's a lot more data than that accessible to certain people and people who are willing to pay for it.
But as I said a little bit ago, you have to go and do a physical search at a county courthouse.
No, you don't. You don't have to. There are online services where you pay them to find out this information, and it's cheap too. It's like $20 a person.
Or private eyes, as Steve Rambam will tell us, can have access to all sorts of things. But again, this is a relatively small number of people that have this access. Though I feel good that they have this access, not really, but. Having access with millions of people, that's going to be interesting.
Well, I guess the question is if you think that they're somehow more trustworthy than the rest of us, and I don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't agree with that either. So,
just be prepared for whatever comes down the pike when everybody's able to look up everybody else. And
Google is becoming a universal and all-encompassing card catalog.
Busybody. They want to know everything about
everybody.
Well,
sorry for that. But if you remember card catalogs in a library, you know, big bank of index cards on which is every book listed both by subject, by author, and by title. And you can find it there. Now, if you have to go to the library and dig through the card catalog, that's one thing. But if the card catalog is on your computer, that's another. Similarly with the private eyes. If they have either a separate system or they know of a site they have to go to and enter a password, that's one thing. There are only, 100,000 private eyes in the country? With Google, there are 3 million outlets at least, probably 20, 30, 50 million. Every computer is an outlet for Google.
Very true. Okay, continuing on with talk of computers, a group of researchers led by the University of Tokyo has broken internet speed records twice in 2 days. Operators of the high-speed Internet 2 network announced Tuesday that the researchers on December 30th, took them a while to announce this, I guess, their speed isn't all that impressive, sent data at 7.67 gigabits per second using standard communications protocols. That's even faster than my cable modem, isn't it?
Pretty fast, yeah. It's about 1,000 times faster than your cable modem.
Well, there's no need to get snippy about it, but next day, using modified protocols, the team broke the record again by sending data over the same 20,000-mile path at 9.08 gigabits per second. That likely represents the current network's final record because rules require a 10% improvement for recognition, a percentage that would bring the next record right at the Internet 2's current theoretical limit of 10 gigabits.
Recognition by who?
I don't know. This is kind of nutty, actually. Researchers used the newer internet addressing system called IPv6 to break the records in December. Data started in Tokyo, went to Chicago, Amsterdam, and Seattle before returning to Tokyo. The previous high was 6.96 gigabits per second. That was set in November 2005. Internet 2 is run by a consortium of more than 200 U.S. universities. It's currently working to merge with another high-speed, ultra-high-speed, next-generation network. Guys know what it's called?
Internet 3?
No. good guess, though. National Lambda Rail.
What?
Have you ever heard of this?
Never heard of it.
How do you spell it?
National, obviously. Lambdarail.
Like the Greek
like
letter?
Like the Greek letter, yeah.
Sounds like a train service for homosexuals.
Well, I don't know. That's interesting. Interesting records being set every day, I guess, in the internet. But I think what we're moving towards is just having everything being every place at once. You know,
very quickly, at least.
I mean, it's all about copying. It's all about moving data from one place to another. And if everything is already there, like there's a box. In the future, you'll have a box, and that will be all the data in the world, and it'll be right there. And all you have to do is plug something into it and read it.
That's not that interesting.
Well, that's not the same idea.
Well, you won't have to copy. You won't have to transfer data because the data will already be there.
That's not this idea at all. The idea is this is transferring data. The box will be somewhere else, and they will bill you for transferring it quickly.
I'm just saying the idea of transferring data, one day that will become obsolete because all the data will already be there.
What if you're creating new data and you want other people to have
exactly.
it?
It's constantly being updated. It's not.
Well, then the new data will have to, I don't know. I haven't invented all of it yet, but I'm just saying all this speed, it all involves copying things from one place to another.
Yeah.
As long as the stuff is where you need it to be, then you don't have to worry about the speed.
All right, then.
All right. let's see. We have This site that just came out of nowhere, this is really kind of cool, actually. You guys probably heard the news story about the truck that crashed into a overpass in Oakland and caused all kinds of mayhem. Well, apparently there's all kinds of controversy about what actually happened and who's covering up what. And now there's a new site called 429truth.com. That's right. It's got all the facts about all the things that really happened on April 29th. And yes, I know it's only a couple of days ago, but still there's a whole lot of information about this.
Well, I think it's good that people are sparing no time in getting to the bottom of this important story.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'd like to take this moment, according to the website from the person who runs it, to welcome our new readers. 429truth.com hasn't been up for very long, but already the response from skeptics and truth seekers is amazing. Most people seem to recognize that even if some of the details remain cloudy, there are many, many problems with the official story, which cannot be recently explained. Now, and they have links for all these things, too. Hours earlier, another car caught fire in exactly the same spot. Coincidence? Trial run? An accidental early detonation by incendiary devices implanted in the retaining wall? Also, a similar attack occurred on March 30th in St. Petersburg, Florida, almost 1 month to the day from the April 29th incident. And all this is documented and linked with news stories and everything. WebSense has been tied to the cover-up attempt to silence our voices by inexplicably banning our site from their networks due to sexual content. The aptly named Protein Wisdom has speculated that the collapse was the result of a missile strike. Our friends, you think this is funny? You think this is funny?
It's kind of funny.
It's not funny at all. This is a conspiracy here that's being uncovered quickly this time, too. We don't have to wait years for some kind of commission. It's 3 days. 3 days now all the facts are coming out.
Wow.
Our friends at 911 Blogger, just 1 second, Bernie, have pointed out that this incident is serving as timely rebuttal ammo whenever the implausibility of the WTC collapse is pointed out for 9/11 deniers. And the infamous liberal San Francisco SF Gate and Nico Melendez, mouthpiece for the Transportation Security Agency, are already talking about setting up checkpoints along the highway. Welcome to the new police state, proles. Yes, Bernie.
They missed another important link to this story. The secret group of plotters behind this this act did another trial run back here in Philadelphia about 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They set a large pile of tires. A huge yard full of tires, rubber tires, were lit on fire, and it was determined to be arson, and it was directly under I-95, and it literally melted I-95, eerily similar to what just happened in California.
So you think that was a trial run as well, maybe?
Well, yeah, I think this is a sequence of connected events, and people just need to look at the history and see that this is clearly not a coincidence.
I wish I had some of the ominous music to play in back of me, but I'm going to read this and just imagine the ominous music in back of me. The highway collapsed at 4:02 a.m. while Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger was supposedly asleep in Sacramento. Yet in these photos, he is seen at the site of the collapse while it is still pitch blackout. For reference, sunrise on April 29th was 6:16 a.m., but civil twilight started at 5:48 a.m., nautical twilight at 5:14 a.m., and astronomical twilight at 4:38 a.m., i.e., the sky started to get lighter at 4:38, and by 5:48, it was basically morning. I wish you'd stop laughing about this. This is not funny. This is I'm trying to be serious here, and you know, imagine the ominous music. All right. It is 78.3 miles from Sacramento to the crash site. Now, here is a hypothetical timeline of events. 4:02, highway collapses. 4:05, governor receives phone call. 4:20, showered and dressed. Assume 15 minutes and that he shaved in the car. 5:08, arrive at site after 48-minute drive at 100 miles per hour.
It's pretty fast.
5:13 is the governor.
That's faster than the governor of New Jersey.
Well, you know, I didn't even know about that.
Schwarzenegger is more superhuman.
I heard about this when I got back from China and North Korea. I was reading about how the governor of New Jersey was being released from the hospital and how he was really sorry he wasn't wearing a seatbelt. I didn't even know this happened until he got out of the hospital, because
you were in North Korea.
When you go away and are isolated from the rest of the world, you sort of miss certain things. So I'm sure there are other things I'll find out about that happened that I don't know about yet. Anyway, 5:13, press conference starts. Assume 5 minutes to get it going. 5:33, press conference ends and site tour begins. Assume minimum 20-minute press conference. Note that Schwarzenegger, Newsom, and Dellums all talk, and these are politicians talking. 5:48, tour of site ends. Assume 15 minutes. Yet the photos clearly show it's still pitch black during the entire press conference and site tour. i.e. much earlier than the hypothetical timeline above. How could Schwarzenegger have arrived at the site any earlier? The answer is that he knew what was planned. He should have waited a reasonable amount of time before arriving at the site, but he probably couldn't resist the Hollywood photo op in front of still-glowing wreckage, not realizing that this would tip his hand and reveal his inside knowledge. Well, this site is just filled with all kinds of facts and theories, and it's good to see people asking the tough questions so soon.
I'm glad that we'll be able to get to the bottom of this.
Well, it's been plaguing me ever since it happened. And
So we know that it wasn't the gasoline that caused the collapse, because according to Rosie O'Donnell, gasoline cannot cause steel to melt, right?
You just insist on injecting Rosie O'Donnell into every conversation, don't you?
I liked her in East of Eden, or Exit Eden.
All right, well, maybe you should exit Eden.
So 429truth.com for people who want to learn more.
That's right. And a bit of sad news. I'm sure we all heard of the death of Jack Valente, the former head of the Motion Picture Association of America. You know, I got all kinds of mail and phone calls, and people even came to visit me thinking I'd be inconsolable. I'm not quite sure what kind of reaction people were expecting. Some people thought I'd be happy, which is certainly not true. For those who don't know, Jack Valente was pretty much at the heart of the lawsuit against us in 2000. You find that funny, too? You just got the giggles tonight, don't you, Redbird? All right. Well, it's...
To say he was at the heart of it is maybe an exaggeration. He didn't seem to know anything about it when asked.
Well, that's true. He kept saying he didn't know anything, but that's what you do when you're in front of a panel asking you what you know.
All right.
But the point is, he was the one with the sound bites saying that we were engaging in piracy and all kinds of things like that. It kind of bothered me that he obviously didn't get it, that he obviously didn't understand what was actually happening in this case, what the ECSS was all about, what was being done, what was not being done. And, of course, going back in time, looking at the comments he made about, Bernie, VCRs?
Yes, I have a quote from him. If you don't have it, it's a good one.
Okay, what is it?
Well, back in 1982, during the hearings on the famous Sony Betamax case, where the motion picture industry was so upset that VCRs would destroy the motion picture industry, Jack Valente went before Congress in these hearings at the Subcommittee on Courts, Civil Liberties, and the Administration of Justice. He said, quote, "I say to you that the VCR is to the American film producer and the American public as the Boston Strangler is to the woman home alone," end quote.
In Boston?
Well,
it doesn't mean anything to somebody in San Diego.
Maybe
You know, you can interpret it two ways.
Hmm.
You know, it could be the Boston Strangler could actually get on a train, a Lambda train, and go somewhere.
Maybe. Maybe so. Enough of the Lambda train. So we were naturally... saddened to hear of his passing. I got to say, for an 85-year-old guy, he was incredibly sharp, and he never seemed to lose that sharpness. It's just too bad he was on the other side of this particular case, because I think he would have agreed with us on a lot of things. I really do. Kirk Douglas said at his funeral, "If you were Jack's friend, your troubles became his troubles." And nothing would have pleased me more than for my troubles to have become his troubles as well. It's just the kind of thing that, I mean that in a good way, because he seemed like a friendly kind of a guy that would care about the things that were going on in your life, like people suing you. When the time comes for me to be upstairs waiting for St. Peter to see me, this is Kirk talking, not me, I expect Jack to find me and bring me to the big man. So there are a lot of people at his funeral. That
Jack Valente also basically invented the film rating system.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that rating continues to this day, G, PG, R, PG-13, NC-17. Well, that's a whole other story. All right, so that's Jack Valente for you, and he will be missed, definitely. Definitely an icon in the stage. All right, we have a whole bunch of letters, a lot of feedback from the things we've talked about in the past few weeks. And again, you can write to us, oth@2600.com. Here's a letter from Derek out in Buffalo. "I was playing around with the new free 411 service by Google. It's 1-800-GOOG-411. I tried it on a Verizon payphone. It connected my call to the local business of my choosing without asking for any money.
Ooh.
Unfortunately, I did not have the time to try the same thing with a business out of the area, but hopefully someone else will and report back." Well, I imagine it wouldn't know the difference between a business in a different city and the business in your city.
A lot of services online have been offering stuff like this, and then they sort of dwindle away and disappear. Where you know they'll connect you to other calls for free, but Google has sort of all this money behind them, and I guess they suppose it's worth the advertising benefits that they get out of it. They get to know who you're looking up and when and where, and maybe if they have the cell phone records, you know exactly where you were.
They get to know even more about you. They're really curious. They really want to know everything, don't they?
With ANI, they would know where you're calling from, so they may only connect you to the local business.
But if they're gathering all this data from cell phone companies, they could know your physical location.
What would be the advantage to them to only connect you to local calls from your perspective when their telephone system is probably somewhere else entirely?
We can solve this pretty quickly. Let's see. Who should we try to connect to?
Motion Picture Association.
KPFA?
How about the White House?
I don't want to talk to them.
Well, I don't want to talk to them either, but let's call Google and see if they can connect us to the White House. Google 411.
Google 411.
Calls recorded for quality. Google 411, experimental. What city and state?
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. What business name or category?
White House.
White House.
Top two results. Number one.
White House. On Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest.
To select number one, you can press one or say number one.
Number one.
Number one.
White House. On Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest.
I'll connect you. Or say details or go back.
Details.
Details. You can also get the details by saying text message.
White House. 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest, Washington. Phone number 202-456-1111.
Here it is again.
White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest, Washington. Phone number 202-456-1111.
I'll connect you.
No, you don't have to, really. I just wanted the number. But I don't want to be connected. I just wanted the number. Well, this isn't right. They shouldn't be connecting me when I don't want to be connected.
Thank you for calling the White House comment line. The office is now closed.
Yeah, well, okay. Let's hang up on them. All right, I like that service. That's kind of cool. It's very easy to use, but I just don't like them connecting you without asking if you want to be connected. That's a little presumptuous, don't you think? But otherwise, yeah, it connects out of town. We can use this for all sorts of things.
And I'm glad to, Emmanuel, I'm glad to see that Stephen Hawking got a part-time job at Google.
Now, that's not nice. That obviously was not him. That's that same computer that's been talking since the 1970s.
You know, there was a time not that long ago when we would have been really excited to learn we could make calls for free.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's not so exciting anymore. But the fact that we can go downstairs and go to a payphone and call this number and supposedly be connected to anything in the country that's listed...
That's pretty useful.
That is pretty useful.
Does it only work for listed?
Well, how else are you going to look up somebody if they're not listed, Jim?
I would think maybe they have an unlisted directory.
Oh, that's priceless. Okay.
Is it only for businesses, or can you call people too?
Well, do you know anybody who would like their name and number spoken over the air? We can try it, but I don't think... let's do that off air.
All right.
I'm sure our listeners right now have turned off the radio and are experimenting with this to their heart's content. We'll see. Okay, more letters. Just wanted to report what I think is a disturbing trend in purchasing credit to use a service. Basically, the service provider, in this case Skype, gets to nominate an expiry date of those credits, whereby you lose those credits and they are not refunded. They are just absorbed by the company. It's in essence money for nothing. They get to keep the money without having to deliver the promised services, of course, subject to terms and conditions. In the case of Skype, it's within 180 days of not making a VoIP call, voice over IP phone call, that cost money, that is, call landline or mobile and then hang up. Simply logging in to their service and calling or chatting with someone who has Skype is not regarded as a valid enough use to reset those 180 days. I understand also some phone card providers have an extra one that says you have X days to use the card from first usage. So it's not even a rolling X days, it's 60 days from that first time you use the card. And that's just another example. Read more about it at Andrew's blog at biscuit-rant.blogspot.com/2007/04/skype-bad.html. Thanks. Andrew, for writing in with that. But that's a disturbing trend.
There's actually laws in some states that provide a sort of minimum length of time that a gift certificate must be valid. I don't know if that would apply here or not.
Is it a gift certificate or is it something that you're actually buying?
Yeah, I don't know how it works.
If it's considered paying for the service, it might not apply. But they've saved me a lot of money, so I never really was bothered by that.
Well, just because someone saves you a lot of money doesn't mean they can rob you afterwards.
No, that's true. That's true.
It's not really fair. But
if you're concerned, you could call your state attorney general. They might actually be able to help you.
If you can actually get through.
Well,
yeah. It reminds me, what phone company is it that has literally on their phone bills, use them or lose them for the minutes you have? It's kind of obnoxious. Is it Singular or is it T-Mobile? I'm not sure.
Singular rolls over, right? So I don't know.
They do roll over.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's one where if you don't use them, you lose them. And it seems like they're rubbing it into your face. Not
I think it actually might be Boost Mobile.
Is it Boost Mobile?
I'm assuming so.
All right.
Sounds like their kind of terminology.
Yeah, that's
Wait, but I thought they were prepaid. They don't send you bills.
Yeah. Mm. Kind of run rings around your logic there.
If anyone knows, contact us.
Okay. And again, our email address, oth@2600.com. You're off the hook. Emmanuel has been brainwashed. I knew it for sure when North Korean radio came on. It's the best radio I've ever heard. Listener since 1965. How did you do that? Find Fletcher from New York City. I don't know how you could be listening to us since 1965. Maybe the radio station is what you mean, because we've only been on since 88.
Could listen to BAI since 65.
Yeah, okay. I guess
I knew your deadpan attitude was not going to be interpreted as sarcasm.
Dear Emmanuel, just in the past week, I heard some commentary about doing business in China. One of the comments was that in China, a contract or agreement of any kind is considered only the start of endless negotiations, as you found out when you had to negotiate getting on another flight back to the U.S., signed Mark. And yes, Mark, it certainly was a nightmare, a lot of negotiation, yelling and screaming. Actually, I didn't yell and scream. I was kind of subdued the whole time. Maybe I would have gotten further if I had been yelling and screaming like a lot of people in the airport. But yeah, it's what you got to do. It's what you got to do.
I'm not really convinced that a U.S. airline would behave any differently, though. They might understand you, but they wouldn't help you.
I'll bet a U.S. airline would have their actual phone number on the website, not the phone number of some shady outfit in Las Vegas.
That's kind of.
And I'll bet when you talk to the person and got a price, that would be the price that you actually got, not three times that price.
Have you ever dealt with the airlines? Like, they don't.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is, I got a call from the guy in Los Angeles. Who said he couldn't figure out how to make the price transfer to Beijing. And it was my problem on how to get that to happen. You know, I just don't think that would be tolerated in one of the major airlines here.
I think you give them a lot of credit.
Well, I think I give the American public a lot of credit for not taking crap when they shouldn't. We'll see. What else? Regarding the problem of speaking English in the hotel in Beijing and China, depending on the generation of people, you sometimes have to speak word by word instead of how you normally speak. Most people over there do not understand that they only need to ask you to slow down when you're talking fast. I experienced this when I was over in Shangzhou this last December with my fiancé to meet her parents. Just thought you'd find this tidbit of information interesting. Signed, Showfire, and definitely helpful information to have. When you ask somebody, do you speak English, though, and they say yes, you kind of assume you can sort of start talking, and they seem to be understanding you until you get to the last word when they say, what? They didn't understand a single word you said, and you don't know where to go back to. Let's see.
Translations.
I'm sorry, Bernie. Go ahead.
We have some North Korean translations.
Yes. And in fact, let me find those. We played some North Korean radio over the past... Actually, we played a North Korean song a couple of weeks ago, and then last week we played some material that I actually was able to tape off of the radio when I was in Pyongyang. Let's see. Let's do the first week first. Actually, Mike, you were responsible for finding the material. What was the material?
Yeah, it's from a CD called Radio Pyongyang, which is put out by, I guess, a record label called Sublime Frequencies. And what they do is they go all around the world and they sort of record local radio and local musicians and sort of mix it up in interesting ways. And they generally do a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the translation there?
I do.
Okay.
And so the beginning of what we played was actually from a numbers station, which our listeners should know about.
This is 2 weeks ago. So if you're going in your archives, listen to it. 2 weeks ago or was it three weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
It's 2 weeks ago. Okay.
And at the end of the show, we played this bit, which started with a woman saying, this is document number 2830 over and over again. And then they played a song. And the translation of the song lyrics are, Wind blowing tree leaves makes me miss him. Looking at the sky's white clouds makes me miss him more. Cloud, bring me to my father general's arms. I want to run and leap into his arms. My chest is bursting, missing him. Today I wish him health and wait for him. And the father general is, of course, Kim Il-sung, the great leader of North Korea. And then there is a man speaking who says, here is Chosun's Panmunjom, which is the joint security area on the border. Here we can see American invaders, for the first time in history, surrendered to the mighty power of North Korea. And so that is what they say.
That's,
we
impressive.
Should thank Stella, who did the translation for us.
And Stella also did the translation for the radio that we played last week, which we have here. She says the content is pretty mundane, reporting what happened in Kim Jong-il's life that day. Kim Jong-il, of course, being the current leader, son of Kim Il-sung. This is Pyongyang Broadcasting Station. It is 7 o'clock. And then you had the beeps. Man speaking, this is news broadcasting. Several diplomats from various countries came over and gave the great leader Kim Jong-il flower baskets and letters for the Sun holiday. The head diplomat personally delivered the flower baskets and letters in company of his entourage. Of course, the Sun holiday being the birthday of Kim Il-sung, April 15th. Then the woman speaking. Mongol diplomats also came over and gave presents to the great leader Kim Jong-il for the Sun holiday on 12th. Man speaking. The great leader Kim Jong-il generously gave presents to Mongol representatives. Woman speaking. This undying classical piece written by the great eternal president Kim Il-sung, etc., etc. And then apparently the piece that we played that was music was written by Kim Il-sung and was then played. And
who knew he could do so much?
He did a lot of things. He wrote a million books and, well, all sorts of things. Then later on, the piece that we played at the end of the show, woman speaking, this is Pyongyang Broadcasting Station. It is 12 o'clock. And that's pretty much all that Stella was able to make out in that particular section. But thanks, Stella, for sending that in and for letting us know what's being said. It's always good to have translations of various things that we play over the air. Yeah, so I've gotten a lot of feedback about North Korea, a lot of questions. And I guess if people want to call back with questions about what it was like over there, I'll try and answer as best I can. Dear Emmanuel, some comments about your impression of North Korea. I understand what you mean about not believing everything that one is told about an enemy nation, and I'm sure that there are plenty of nice people in North Korea just like everywhere else. However, you mentioned several times in last week's Off the Hook that these are things that the North Koreans have chosen to value and believe in as a culture, and that is far from the truth. Surely they have learned to survive there as humans will just about everywhere, but to imply that they are content with no freedom of speech, hearing only news about their wonderful and glorious leader, is a gross misstatement. I don't know if you got to discuss the politics with any North Koreans, but if you did, they would likely be very nervous and it would be very difficult for them to say anything that wasn't praising towards their government. I can understand why you wouldn't bring up politics, and as a trip to just explore the human condition, it sounds like you were very successful. A couple of comments here. Yeah, you know, it's I don't know how you can get in their heads and know when they're not content.
The problem is I don't think they have anything to compare it to. They don't really know what the way of life is here, right? So it's
right.
It's totally different mentality, I think.
And that's basically it, is the fact that that you don't have exposure to these things, so how can you possibly know that you desire it? You have no conception of the outside world. And am I saying that's a good thing? Of course not. But to say that they're not content, I saw these people. They are content. The people I saw seemed very content. And basically, I just think it's dangerous to assume that people want our way of life and to force it upon them.
And if you did ask them about, you know, politics over there, what they would be saying is probably what they believe. It wouldn't be that they were being forced to lie. It's just that's what they believe, and they wouldn't really understand
right.
any of the points that you were trying to make. So I'm not saying that this is a good thing, but it's
not
totally
for us
different.
To say. That's the point I'm trying to make here, is that it's really up to the people there to decide the kind of life they want to lead, and the people there seem to be leading a life that that they're at least. Understanding a whole lot better than we are. And will there be changes? Yeah, you know, I think there will be changes, but only if there's dialogue, only if there's communication between people. And we don't have that now. And I think the best way to get that is to try and understand people on their terms.
And I think making the analogy between their government doing what they want and our government doing what we want is a pretty good one, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of people who don't agree with what our government doing. And, you know, we can't change that. And it's the same thing with them. So
let me continue with this letter here. In any case, you have been there and I have not, so I cannot speak directly. And I'm sure we have been told some greatly exaggerated stories, but I have seen and read interviews with people who have managed to escape from North Korea, and my impression has been that the people are decidedly not happy there. Of course, obviously, people who escape are not happy. Sometimes, though, and I'm not saying this is true of the majority of cases, but it has been true of a significant number, the stories that are being told have been proven to be not true. So, for instance, there was one person who was claiming to have been a driver for the food aid convoy and that he would deliver food directly to the army. It would go bypass the towns and go directly there. And the head of the UN food program said, this is not true. This person doesn't work for us. He's making it up. So sometimes, and it's also happened that people who escape the country aren't really escaping the country, that they're going and spreading misinformation just to mess with people's heads, and they're actually still working for the government over there. So you really, you can't base it just on the people that that cross the border and go someplace else, because obviously they have a very strong opinion. You shouldn't discard those opinions, but at the same time, you have to look at other opinions. And the only way to do that is seeing, meeting, talking to the people inside the country. Continuing, I appreciate you visiting this country and reporting on it from the inside. It is always good to have our government's message questioned. However, I can't believe you would paint the North Koreans as being so content with their society as they chose it to be the way it is, which is probably the closest thing the world has yet seen to the society described in 1984. P.S. If you read this on the air, use it in your magazine or something, please don't mention my name. Well, who's afraid of being identified and tracked down or whatnot? I just think that's a bit ironic there. But thanks for the opinions, well expressed. Okay, what else? We've got more people commenting. By the way, our phone number is 212-209-2900, and we'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit. People commenting also on what happened in China, various things that I was doing over there. No doubt you're sick of this question, but I'm really curious about what happened in China after you searched for Falun Gong. Who was the friendly person who silently sat through the rest of the broadcast? Someone from the hotel that didn't want to get in trouble with the government? Was it that final search that really tipped it over the edge? Or did the earlier ones actually raise a flag that it just took a few minutes for whoever to respond to? The gang in New York were laughing about how quickly the knock on the door came when you went to answer it, but when you came back and asked to change the subject, it was shocking. I'm glad you made it back okay, signed one boring person. Well, thanks for writing. Actually, I have to say, so many people have written about this asking what it was that really happened. And, I'm tempted to just explain what the magic of radio is, where, you know, we were talking about this before, about how television kind of sucks you in, and radio is something that you really rivet your attention to. But yet, through radio, without actually seeing something, you can create impressions of all sorts of things that are going on. I'm tempted to just sort of explain it away that way, that people basically get an image based on the sounds that they hear over the air. But just to satisfy people's curiosity, as far as what actually happened when we typed in, or I typed in Falun Gong into the Google search engine, and it immediately reset, and then there was the knock on the door. Well, what that actually was... in effect. And, you know, that's really the God's honest truth of what actually happened. So now you know pretty much everything that we know. And to be honest, you know, I'm kind of sick of the question. I don't want to bring it up anymore. I don't want to talk about it. So please respect that. Please respect that and don't bring it up again, because I've been through it enough. All right. All right. Let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. And do we have any phone calls? We have one phone call. Let's get a bunch more. Let's get a bunch more. Let's read some letters here. More letters. We get so many letters. OTH at 2600.com. Let's see. was listening to the first half of Off the Hook from April 25th on the way to work this morning. You're spot on with the whole Boris Yeltsin, some dumb actor's phone message thing. The mainstream media in the U.S. is a joke and has to be at least partly responsible for the average American's ignorance of real-world affairs. In the grand chase for ratings and thus better advertising revenue, and to be the first to get the scoop and thus the ratings, the media here in the U.S. have lost the plot. The problem is, most of the sheep with their fingers on the remote controls haven't noticed this. They're getting what they think they want, so they're happy, contented, and they share the blame for eating the crap the news outlets feed them and making it more likely that the news will give us more of the same. After all, it's what gets the viewers, right? With the whole 24/7, always-on, interconnected, live people, there's always a disturbing shift towards we want the news immediately. This was obvious in the early coverage of the Virginia Tech shootings, where the same few seconds of video were endlessly looped, and most of the questions asked at the first press conference a few hours after the shootings were differently worded versions of the same few questions, all wanting information that could not reasonably be known to the investigators so soon. Yet they asked them repeatedly because people want to know now. They'll get all sulky and go elsewhere when you can't do that for them, and they're too ignorant to realize that finding out what happened generally takes more than 5 minutes in these situations. To keep them happy, the news outlets provide facts light, endless, worthless speculation about what happened, why, and most importantly, who to blame and scapegoat. The death of a former president, whose name is probably not even known to most Americans born in the last 20 years, referring to Boris Yeltsin, doesn't put bums on seats. I like that expression. But the death of a woman who had no notable talents beyond being blonde, loud, formerly married to a rich old man with a bad cough, and more often than not seen in public stoned off her face, captivates the average couch potato. Anna Nicole Smith's death was tragic, as death generally is, but her impact on the world we live in was minimal, especially compared to someone like Boris Yeltsin, who changed the course of an entire nation and reshaped the world in doing so. However, she's well-known, and news about her gets the ratings up, so her death received weeks of coverage, even on the local news, while he gets almost no mention anywhere. The world is not suddenly a different place because of what some celebrity did earlier today, but it might have changed because of some boring news item that didn't get reported. News should be about reporting the known facts about important events, not maximizing advertising revenue through higher ratings. By that standard, all the big media news providers in this country are failures and should be ashamed of themselves. Thank you, Paul, for those brilliant words, and hopefully that'll keep you listening to the news here on WBAI, where I think we do get it right.
My first comment is here. I would like to, in the tone of that letter, recommend a book that's almost as old as I am, but is still very true today. It's called A Nation of Sheep. It's written by the same people who wrote The Ugly American, I believe one of whose names is Burdick, B-U-R-D-I-C-K. Mm-hmm. And essentially, it bemoans that very fact. It is not new that the news media does a horrible job covering any sort of intelligent or important news. And it gives you solid suggestions on what you can do to actually improve your knowledge of what's important and what will be affecting you. If you want that sort of thing, if you'd like to be mindlessly entertained, just keep going the way things are going. But otherwise, pick up a copy of A Nation of Sheep and take its suggestions to heart.
And with the internet today, it's even easier, I would think, to obtain news from reliable sources.
The main suggestion in A Nation of Sheep is that you should go to other sources rather than your local media to get the news, and it suggests the Christian Science Monitor and the BBC and others.
Okay, Mike, quickly, you have something on crisis.
Yeah, one such source is Cryptome, which is cryptome.org, which is a website that publishes a lot of source materials, primary sources, from government and other organizations. And they always have a lot of good information about all kinds of crazy stuff. And they are being shut down, or at least their current internet service provider, which is called Verio, has sent John Young, who's the proprietor of the website, this sort of very vague email saying he's violated their acceptable use policy and they will terminate his service. So he's going to be moving to another service, but it's really, no one knows why they're shutting him down or what, you know, who put pressure on them. It's kind of very mysterious.
That's what happens when you say controversial things. They try to silence you.
Yeah.
I'm well familiar with that. All right, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please.
Hey, you know, Google's 411 service, at the beginning, they play a little announcement saying that they might monitor the call. So it really isn't a good source for free phone calls.
Yeah, you're right.
They might hang up on you.
I just assumed they were talking about the information call. But that's right. If they connect you, they can monitor the entire call. And they did say that, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Very good point. Wow. Google really
they might
is.
They're listening to see what you're talking about.
They're really invading, I think. All right. Thanks. Thanks for that little bit of information. That's kind of kind of spooky there. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up.
Good show as usual.
Thank you.
But the letter probably misquotes. It wasn't Boris Yeltsin who transformed the Soviet Union. It was Mikhail Gorbachev.
Well,
and
they
that
both
can be
did.
Debated,
yeah.
But it can't be disputed.
Well,
have a good evening.
They both obviously had a lot to do with it. Boris Yeltsin certainly was bugging Mikhail Gorbachev to make all sorts of changes. He felt a lot of pressure from him, and it's basically the important people in important places at important times. Certainly more important than Anna Nicole Smith. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, Emmanuel.
How you doing?
Go to Cuba.
All right. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm commenting on the comments that people made on your visit to Korea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why it is Americans especially and Westerners generally always think that a place like North Korea, is not free. There's no freedom of expression. The people don't support the government, what have you. This is a country that has been attacked many times. It has been invaded by the United States. It has been split into two. Millions of lives were, millions of people died in the struggle to save their country. And the government, of course, is paranoid, and the people are themselves paranoid, and I'm sure that there's probably no absolute freedom there. But here in the United States, a building was blown up. One or two buildings was blown up, and the people were prepared to give the government total carte blanche to change and revoke the Constitution. And in the last few, in 6 years, because of that single incident, there are lots of things that happen that are happening in the U.S. now that is very similar to the things that are happening in serious military dictatorships and autocratic countries all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
As I see it, what's going on now in the United States is very similar to a lot of the things that used to be that the U.S. used to criticize the Soviet Union about, in terms of people are scared to talk
mm-hmm.
loudly to their own neighbors. You are scared to make statements in public places because you don't know who's listening. And you have something called an 800 number, my 800 security number. Once you have that in a country, there's no real freedom because anybody can, unanimously call this 800 security hotline, give your name, give your address, and some dumb security man or whoever thinks that he has something hot to work on.
Which
can
number?
Can make your life a misery.
Which it number
can
is this?
Your entire life in misery.
Which 800 number are you referring to?
I'm talking about the security hotline.
The security hotline.
Homeland
Security.
Department of Homeland Security.
Okay.
Security hotline.
Okay. Well, certainly, if it hasn't gotten to that stage yet, it's definitely well on the way to that, and something that we have to. Keep a close eye on because, you make some good points there. But we don't really have time to discuss it much more because we're almost out of time. We do want to get to a bunch of calls. Thanks for that call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up.
Yes, hello. This question is for Michael. It's a great show. But I would like to ask you, do you know about Easy Pass when you took Triboro or Midtown Tunnel? If you get too close to another car, you ride for free.
Is that true? If you get too close to another car, you ride for free on Easy Pass.
I don't believe it.
I don't think so because the gate only opens once.
No, but if you are very close, you won't pay because the green light from the first car will still open the gate.
Yes.
And I did it many times, honestly.
You've done it, okay.
That's called stealing.
Well, yeah, I suppose it is, or tailgating.
You don't even need an Easy Pass to do it. You just get very close to the car in front of you, and when it opens up for them, you ride
Here's a question. Here's a hypothetical question. What if you're towing a car? You got the rope, and you're just towing another car, And, you know, I guess you only have to pay for one ride. So
well,
if you're,
yeah, because only one vehicle is manned, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, why not just simply do that, tie two cars together and drive through the tunnel that way?
You can't legally tow a car with another car for any distance. It has to be a tow truck.
Really? You can't do that legally? All the people I see towing cars are doing...
Yeah, you can do it like in your neighborhood, but I've been in cases of that where you've been stopped by the police.
The cameras at these toll booths still take the picture there, so the potential of sneaking behind a car and getting close, you can still get caught.
Uh-huh, but what are they taking a picture of? If you're that close to the car, they can't see your license plate unless they take it from the back.
Well, they'll see another car right behind it.
Yeah, they actually compare the license plates with the license plate that's registered to the tag.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess, well, we have a lot of experimenting to do with going through toll booths, I suppose.
By the way, the booths in New Jersey, certain places don't have gates at all, unlike the MTA tunnels and bridges and stuff. So. Uh-huh.
Seems like a lot of effort to just, you know, drive into a city where cars aren't needed anyway.
Well, on that subject, with regards to Bloomberg's idea for having the congestion tax, whatever it is they call it, this is a statement that, according to the Plan NYC Transportation Technical Report, it says, drivers' privacy would be protected as records would only be kept for the purposes of congestion charging and discarded as soon as payments are processed.
Keep in mind, though, that with all the subpoenas due to national security matters, I don't think that's very private in, you know, when it comes to certain matters.
Can anybody here really honestly believe that they're going to discard the information about all the cars that pass by? I mean, all the cars, not just cars going through tunnels, all the cars in a city, in a particular area. I mean,
that could generate huge revenue just to sell that data. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't believe it.
Well, I think we'd find out if they sold it, like. You know, there's certain things they can get away with clandestinely, but like if they were selling the data to an enterprise, I think we'd find out.
Yeah, but then we'd find out, and then what? You know, we'd be in the same state we're in now with other data they've sold.
Well, speaking of companies trying to discard data, look at the J.P. Morgan scandal that just happened, where five of their branches in New York City were found throwing out loan applications with their clients' social security numbers on them.
Mm-hmm. This is nothing new.
Shredded.
This is nothing new. They've been doing this for decades, and yeah, it's just. These companies will not change. The governments will not change. It's always going to be about whatever is easiest for them. It's not going to involve privacy or security of individuals. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more phone call. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, yes. Yes, we must defend North Korea against U.S. imperialism. That's the key thing. And the North Koreans are here in New York City. Why not have them come on and get airtime at BAI? Or the Chinese, they're down on 42nd Street and 12th Avenue or something.
12th Avenue, yes.
Why not let them come in and talk? Let's have a friendly discussion with them.
Well, anybody's welcome to come down and talk. Anybody's welcome to come in and call. So our airwaves are always open for anybody to say whatever it is on their mind. But we're out of time, so we can't say any more what's on our mind. The Personal Computer Show is up next. I want to thank everybody for calling in and for writing. Our address, oth@2600.com. And we'll be back again next week with a special fundraising edition. That's right. It's that time all over again. We'll see you next week. Emmanuel for Off the Hook. Have a good night.
This is the dawning of a new era. This is the dawning of a new era. I met a girl from Area 3. Told me she worked at Chicken Factory. This is the dawning of a new era. By 2 o'clock we were Brahms and Liz. Six. This is the dawning of a new era.
I love it. I love it. I love it.